Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, David Von Strong. What's up, David?
Yeah.
David, you there?
We'll talk later. Yeah, I'm here. I'm doing Homegrown right now, like literally right now. What's up?
What's up, David? You are on the air. It's a special Homegrown.
Oh, my God, we're on the air. Oh, what? Oh, wait, let me do it. Hello, Charlottesville. I am on site. It is August 12th, 2018, here in Charlottesville. This is 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Schoen, a.k.a. The Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo, just wandering through this white supremacist darkness, trying to get home.
Trying to get home.
Trying to get home. Just trying to do my thing. I'm right now at Washington Park. We're watching the Solidarity Rally that's going down in Charlottesville. Props to the people that withheld the space and made it available to the public. For the most part, Charlottesville downtown has been shut down. Businesses have been closed. This has been slated as the third highest police populated that Virginia has ever been in one concentrated location. It's a big deal. Why is the music still going on? Can you bring down the music?
Yeah, no, it's giving you a little bit of a beat. We can still hear you.
I get what you're saying.
I'm just giving you a little bit of a beat.
So we're just here.
See, you don't know this because you can never hear this, but usually I let the music slowly fade out.
Well, I'm sorry, yeah. Can you bring down the music? Because, I mean, I don't think it kind of fits with the tone.
We're done.
Because you have to understand. I appreciate that, Clinton. You got to understand, like, there was a feeling of hope and togetherness in the area. However, people are very nervous. I remember walking down the streets on August 12th, around 12:30 p.m., watching the Nazis walk out, feeling really good about everything that had happened that day and that weekend, and that nothing had gone wrong and everything was okay, and we had won the day. And then we started walking down Water Street, we started marching, we started saying whose streets, our streets, and then at 1:15, that car came through and changed everything and changed the entire tone of the day, that night, and that weekend. And it was, it completely changed. So that's unfortunate. And I know that people are feeling the same trepidation and the same nervousness and the same apprehension here right now. Like, what could pop off? What's going to happen? Everybody's watching each other. We got legal observers up on the top of the hill. We got legal observers on the sidewalk. There's two police cruisers parked in the parking lot of the apartment complex directly across from the parking lot. And people are hypervigilant. People are feeling a sense of worry. And I got to tell you, Clinton, like, I was there on the street, and it feels like yesterday. It feels like that entire summer last year that we geared up for whatever could happen, and that same nervousness and that same apprehension and that same fear that gripped all of us. And you come back and it's like seeing an old friend, but it's different. It's like yesterday. And you see all the Black Lives Matter shirts, and you see the bandanas, and you see the water bottles, and you see the banners, and it just brings all of that back, man. I mean, I swear to God, I can taste the tear gas in the air. So it's like, it's crazy. And it's crazy to be in this spot. And it feels so much love, but at the same time feels so much worry and fright. But at the end of the day, it's complete optimism. Yo, good homie, I'm doing Homegrown right now. I just sense that from everybody in the crowd, and yeah, just trying to get an idea of how people feel.
Cool. It sounds
about
like
the occasion.
it sounds like you said, it's both things. It sounds like you're looking back, you're being taken back, but you're also being taken forward. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what trauma does. Trauma automatically puts you back in the situation that you once were, and you know, it's never about that moment that you're in right now. It's about the fear and the panic and the pain that previous moment contained, and that's why you feel a certain way. Like, I understand that. I get it. And at the same time, there is a feeling of wanting, not necessarily wanting to forget things or squash the past or, like, suppress any of the feelings, but really to be comfortable in that feeling and still have the energy to fight and write and still put the battle against white supremacy. I think, and what I'm personally going through is, and I can speak to others' accounts, is that there is a want and there is a feeling of urgency and a need and wanting to actually be available and capable and hold and have capacity to do the work, and simultaneously just not being able to. And not being able to put yourself into work because you're just so tired and you're just so emotionally broken from all the things, and you can't stop crying because it's this weekend. And I've had my moments. I've had a couple of times where I had to cry it out and just kind of like go about my day, but it's real. The feeling is real, and it comes up, and I've done 52 sessions of therapy, and it still feels like it's fresh and it's new and it's still there. So, while I feel that we have galvanized support, we've gotten people off of the fence. I see a lot of new people that haven't worked the station, that weren't passing out water bottles before. People that have personally hit me up on the messenger, hey, I see you out there. What can I do? How can I help? And they're out here helping, working, serving as media contact. So it's like, it's really beautiful to see like an insurgence of need and help and seeing people wanting to contribute and knowing that after today, it doesn't end, that we have a lot of work to do in this town in terms of reminding people of how white supremacy permeates itself through the soil of Charlottesville, how it keeps coming up in these Jeffersonian, like, remembrances and this Confederate romanticism. Like, we're still going to be there to call it in its face. So, you know, you can bring 800 state troopers in here to cause intimidation and fear, but I think what this rally is trying to say is that we're not going away. We're not going to stop doing the work. This doesn't end today. And you can lock people up. You can charge people falsely. You know, you can cause a false riot if you want to. But this isn't going to stop. People aren't going to go away. So it's really beautiful when you look at the entirety of it.
Righteous. What speakers have they had there?
They've had just nobody really big. I mean, well, not big per se. I think all of these people are really big community wise.
Right.
But a lot of local community activists that have been working on the ground for the longest amount of time, speaking at council, speaking at events like this, speaking to national media, saying their piece, fighting the good fight, and just reminding Charlottesville that this fight is still here and it's not, and that we still have a lot more work to do. And yeah, I actually see our newly elected mayor not too far away from me. And our recently promoted vice mayor not too far away from me as well. So there's a nice showing of black elected officials that have always, you know, spoke the truth, like Mikai and like Wes, you know, coming out here, making their presence known and letting the community know that they still stand with them too. And we'll keep pushing them to make those policies that better suit the people and not just the rich, white, Christian male of Charlottesville, and it doesn't still reinforce their priorities. So, yeah, a lot more work to do. A long way to go. So.
Cool. So you said there's
I think, and, Go ahead.
Good. Good. So you said there's a police presence there right now. Is the is the feeling that the police presence is? I mean, how much is the feeling that the police presence is there, just in case there are white?
No, it's not like that. It's not like shields and batons or anything. They're really incognito. There's two cars in the cut. They can radio doubt at any moment. So they're being really careful about this.
Uh-huh.
And I would say for the most part, it's safe for anybody that's listening. Yo, there's still parking. There's parking available at the Washington Park right now. There's still a couple of spots. I see it. Most everybody has walked down from their spaces in Charlottesville to be in the spot. So if you want to come on down, come on down. It's a really good feeling. There's a great sense of optimism. You'll meet some people. You'll learn some things. Like, bring the barbecue, too. So, I mean, they got everything right here. So this is the place to be.
Cool. Cool. Who's talking now?
I'm sorry?
Who's talking now?
Who's talking now? Yeah. I don't recognize that person.
And you might not be at liberty to say, because as we were talking earlier, you were saying that there's still some activists who are very concerned about keeping their identities on the QT.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely, and I want to respect that as much as possible because there is a war against activism. The high presence of highly militarized police is evidence of that. The Baltimore riots and the information behind that is evidence of that.
Yeah, were you walking around yesterday? What was yesterday like for you?
So, it's not just paranoia that keeps activists from, not being photographed and not giving their identity and being really careful about what they do and what they say, especially online, because there's doxing. There's 8chan and 4chan that's pretty much monitored and run by the far right that map this information and go and target people. Corey Long was given death threats all this week. Talking about if we see you on the street, we're going to hang you, this, that, and the third, simply because of his article in The Atlantic, talking about how, Corey joined in the fight. Corey wasn't even going to, be an activist or, be a part of it. He just wanted to see what was going on, and then all of a sudden he found himself in a spray paint can. Somebody took his picture. And then he got, detained. He got put into the court system. He got fired from both of his jobs. Like, this guy's lived a hell just from trying to help. In the form of activism. So we all know how white supremacy, shows its forms. It intimidates people into non-action or saying that people that do act are troublemakers or rabble-rousers or disrupting the natural flow and the order of things.
Or security risks.
They do it by shaming activism. They do it by characterizing anti-fascists. They do it by many different means rather than just blatant, baton beating and legality. So do not be fooled by people who say that, people aren't targeting activists. Activists are just paranoid freaks. No, this shit is real. They're trying to suppress dissent. They're trying to suppress people fighting for their rights because they know that the system is not set up for the people, all of the people, to get all of their rights. So, it makes absolute sense for people for this to go down in the sense that it is. Do you want to see if I can get to talk to some people?
Yeah. Do that.
Okay.
We got 3 minutes till a drop. Hey, do you want me to do a drop while you try to find somebody to talk?
Just do the drop. I'll find somebody. We'll come right back. Okay.
All right. This is Homegrown. We're gonna do a drop. We'll be right back with David here on 94.7.
Hello, this is Craig Jennings. You are listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
16 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Homegrown, special Homegrown. We've got David live down at Washington Park.
What? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Cool. Yep. So I'm still live, Washington Park. I'm standing here with fellow onlookers talking about the events going on. Hi, how you doing?
All right. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. So just trying to play, just regular, you know, go radio interview. How do you feel about being here? What kind of emotions, are going through your mind right now? Just, hearing everybody talk, seeing all the people and reflecting back to A12 of 2017.
Right. So I think I'm glad that the focus today is less on what happened last year than on what needs to happen moving forward. So we've had folks talk about affordable housing and had folks talk about and the militarization of the police and how we need to respond to that. Mm-hmm. So putting this in context of an ongoing fight against white supremacy that started way before last year.
Exactly. It's not just the Klan hanging down for a day, and it's not just the far right hanging out for a weekend. It's this constant, pervasive abuse of people of color and marginalized people that go down in this town every single day, and the policies that need to be changed in order to make it free and equal for everybody here in this town.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad that that's where the emphasis has been today.
Do you feel that there's a sense of optimism in terms of moving forward and enacting all of, you know, those changes into the community? And do you feel like that people are galvanized? Do you feel that people are still, like, kind of reserved, trepidatious? What's the tenor? How do you feel that people feel in terms of moving forward?
I'm not sure optimism is the right word. I think there's a lot of energy and at least at this moment, a lot of solidarity among disparate groups, so clergy groups and more traditional activist groups and, you know, FAR and low-income housing coalitions.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that. I was thrilled to see what the students did last night. I thought they were brilliant.
Same.
So that's all good. I'm also seeing, you know, on my Facebook and Twitter feed a lot of sort of the white moderate pushback that the students were too angry, that it was divisive, so sort of missing the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's clear there's a lot of work to be done in the, you know, larger community.
Mm-hmm. What do you personally take from this? Why are you here?
Well, I would say that last year I thought I was had a generally critical eye toward structures of oppression in society, and realized that I didn't. My whole inner being shifted last year, and understanding just how enforce of white and
support how, white supremacy.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah, and how much more radical I needed to be in my activism. So I can't remember the question, but that's what happened to me last year, and that's why I'm here. And yeah. That's it. My whole world changed. This has to be a single-minded focus.
Right on. So how do you see yourself, like, planting yourself in the movement moving forward, personally?
Some of it is joining with activist groups and supporting that work. And some of it is, you know, I teach at the university, and so I have this opportunity to make sure that the history of eugenics, for example, I teach at the School of Nursing, so that every nurse at every level needs to understand that history and our historical complicity so that they can recognize the forms that it shows up in the 21st century and be ready to speak out about it. So just making sure that it is part of all of the work that I do.
And finding the strength in how you can offer your fight to white supremacy, like, you know, knowing your strengths and, like, all right, you know, I'm a professor, I teach nursing, I do with this, like, what can I do? Oh, I can teach about this in terms of white supremacy, because it's everywhere. It's in every facet of our, you know, being and our civilization. So however we can use tools as people to let people know that this is an issue and help eradicate it, I think it's great work. But I don't want to keep you anymore. Thank you so much for your words.
Thank you.
All right. Super stuff. So as you can see, we're changing minds, changing lives.
Making it happen. It was great.
It shows that people are, you know, kind of watching and seeing exactly how things turn out to be, and that, you know, activists aren't talking out of their ass. Like, there is a serious fear and a serious marginalization of people that goes on every single day in our town. And I'm just thankful that people are at some point realizing that and using some type of introspection and reaching inside and talking about that. I think that's really cool. I'm gonna try to hit up Nakaya while I have the chance.
Yeah, do that. Do that.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Hey. How you doing, Mrs. Walker? I'm well. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm actually doing a live feed from Homegrown, our show on 94.7 WCDC, if you mind talking a little bit.
Not right now.
Okay. I understand that, okay. But I appreciate you, like, hanging out and, like, standing by. And thank you for your work and your words. I appreciate everything that you do. Thank you. All right. Cool. So, moving forward, respectfully declined, but overall appreciated.
There you go. A valiant effort. Classily done.
Hey man, I appreciate it. She's not trying to, you know, get on the platform. She's trying to watch everything and absorb the day and the information. So props to that.
Yeah.
And that's what I want in an elected official. I want somebody to actually, like, sit there and observe and do the work and not just, you know, speak when they got a microphone in their face. So,
well, goodness knows she has been doing her share of interviews, and so, like, she's done her time. She deserves a little bit of a moment for herself.
You got folks supporting you today?
And trying to go to McDonald's just to get a biscuit for breakfast.
I think that's important. I wanted to talk to you, Clinton, personally, because you said something about Tatanesha, how you wish that you could do more.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to put your business out in the air. But
let me turn that around. So we're talking about people who have been drawn into the fight. You've been doing the fight for a while. Can you talk about what your activism has done for you?
What it's done for me, I think what activism has done for me is it sounds really arrogant. And
remember, we're still in the air.
Yeah, I know. To say that. I think what activism has done for me is that it's taught me so much more about people and how to navigate emotion, how to practice empathy truly, accurately, genuinely, without contradiction or without, like, condescension. It's taught me how to just understand people and their pain and their trauma a lot more, and understanding how my pain and my anger is not necessarily the thing that needs to be put out the most. I think activism has taught me how to balance and evaluate how I approach situations better, more carefully, more accurately, building trust, building relationships, building coalitions, maintaining that relationship, making sure it doesn't break, making sure it doesn't waver, and just feeling all of that. So, yeah, I think that's what activism has taught me. It's taught me how to deal with people and feel people a lot deeper, and I really appreciate that, because I thought I was just, like, a year ago, I thought I was just going to scream at some Nazis and that would be the end of it, and I've learned so much in this fight and so much in all of this. Within the past year, I felt like I've gotten, like, a college education in sociology just from learning about how we just need to hold each other as people and our feelings much more deeper, and that it's not just about ourselves. What did Plato say? Be careful, because everybody's got a battle going on, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for everybody has their own battle. So it's like we have to realize that in our battles as people, that we all have our internalized battles as well, that deals with shame, that deals with inadequacy, that deals with paralysis, and sometimes not being able to touch, and not being able to trust, and not being able to go outside just because you are stuck with the trauma and pain of particularly these events, or particularly any events that come out of activism. People talk about A12, but they don't talk about J8 when 3 tear gas canisters were shot in my general direction, and I can still smell tear gas in Justice Park, or whatever its park it's called now, to this very day. Like, it's all real. It all makes sense. And I took for granted this battle. I thought all of these struggles would go away, and I thought all of this would just be a passing feeling, that I'd just shake it off, and that I could move forward. And no, it's so much deeper than that. And yeah, it's just taught me that this is much more serious than what we take it for. This is not just Rage Against the Machine, you know.
Right.
This is life, bro. This is life. People are dying, like, in the streets because of mothers and daughters and families in other countries that can't be free. And it's real, and we really have to do our part, especially as Americans, especially as entitled people on a soil that is not truly ours, that, you know, how much we patronize and condescend to other countries and say we're the best when we are so far from the best. We just have the most stuff right now, and we just have the prettiest toys, but we're definitely not the best in terms of how we treat our people, how we treat each other, how we feed each other, how we listen to each other. We are not the best country in the world. We have so much work to do. So I think activism has taught me how to do all of that better as a person on this earth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I urge, like, people to do whatever form of activism, like, is within your risk assessment, and whatever, like, if you are, like the lady was talking about, she's a nurse and she teaches at UVA, so she can talk about eugenics to all of her students. Like, if you have, like, there is a facet of white supremacy in every occupation in this country, in every facet of society. So if you can locate that, teach it. Let people know where this thinking comes from, and that's how we change it. And everybody's screaming to let Charlottesville know that we're here.
Excellent, excellent. David, we're at the halfway point. I'm going to give you a little break.
Okay.
We're going to take a moment, play a couple of songs. We're not going to do the artistic thing, because that's not what the show is today. We're going to play a couple of songs from local artists. This is Lauren Hoffman's song, Shadow of the Moon. She did it with her and with two other Charlottesville musicians who were counter-protesters last year. We'll do that. Maybe we'll do a little Keith Morris, and then we'll come back to you. Why don't you see if you can snag somebody else?
Okay.
As we come back.
I think the event has ended, but there's still people walking around. So maybe I can – you said you're going to play the song and then me to get somebody during that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We'll do that, and then I'll be back with you.
All right. All right.
All right, cool.
30 minutes past the hour. This is Homegrown. Here's Lauren Hoffman's Shadow of the Moon.
Just a speck on the earth, just a day lost. I thought you guys were like...
All right, 33 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown. This is your only show dedicated to local art. Doing a special Homegrown today. That was Lauren Hoffman with Alethea Leventhal from Ships in the Night and cellist Brandon Collins from BC and also The Cows doing Shadow of the Moon. Go to Bandcamp. I got you, David.
You're gonna do a song? No. We're good. We're going.
We're good.
I got somebody right here.
So hold on, David, before you go, let me just
watch everything. Go ahead.
David, before you go, let me just say to people who are listening, stay tuned afterwards for Sunday morning wake up call. Rick Moore is gonna ask locals about their memories from the Unite the Right rally from last year and also their plans for today. David, go ahead.
Yeah, cool. So I got another guy here, just finished up with the event. What you doing here?
I'm with Charlottesville Clergy Collective.
Okay.
And Congregate Seville.
Okay.
And we're being present at as much as we can, this weekend.
Were you there for the events of last year's?
I was. Event? Yep. I was at First United Methodist. Mostly, I hadn't been trained in direct action, so, I was mostly in a support role.
Okay.
I came out specifically today. I mean, these stories about how white supremacy touches people in personal ways are important to hear.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. How did you feel about the event that happened here? Like any emotions that came up for you, being there last year, any emotions that came up on Saturday, being around there yesterday with all the turtles and their riot gear. What has this weekend been like for you?
It's been a combination of feeling, bring back a lot of reminders of last year and a little bit of tension and a little bit of relief that it hasn't been as violent, but mostly hoping that we can sort of focus more on dealing with white supremacy institutions and not just on a weekend. I mean,
right.
You know, right after the rally last year, for just as an example, Congress immediately passed bipartisan support of condemning hate, right? But since then, can you name one substantive element of oppressive culture, white supremacy legislation that they've undone since then?
Mm-hmm.
They really haven't, right? So it's easy to condemn hate, and it's a lot more work to actually.
And it's also easy when you can take white supremacist hate groups on and off the terror list whenever you feel like it. That's helpful if you run an administration. Yeah. But hey, so let's talk about next steps. What do you feel like, particularly your next steps? For you personally, how you move forward in this space. I know a lot of, you know, a feeling from myself and for everybody else has been brought up. How do you move forward? How do we keep fighting the good fight? What do you think is the, what do you think the trajectory is for, fighting white supremacy after seeing all this going on?
Yeah. So, I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and one of, about 100 years ago, a UU minister talked about the arc of the universe being long but bending towards justice. And it's true that it tends to bend towards justice, but we have to remind people that is a long, long arc.
Mm-hmm.
And think of all the work that's had to happen to make white people not recoil at hearing the term white supremacy.
Yeah.
It really is a lot of work, right? So we've got this incredible and growing wealth gap. We've got an education gap. We have criminal justice issues. It really is going to involve waking up more people and keeping them.
And what is justice in a legal system, in an American legal system that is deeply rooted in white supremacy that we see, you know, from, you know, the three protesters that were incarcerated and, you know, the unusual punishment that they've received, and, you know, and how basically no neo-Nazis have been, you know, brought to trial besides, you know, the three that have been, like, you know, shown whatever. But it's like, yeah, how do you practice true justice when the justice system is rooted in white supremacy?
Right. Well, that's that's the real challenge, because you don't undo white supremacy culture without undoing many of the underpinnings of our country. I mean, it's woven into our laws and our social interactions and our media. And quite honestly, I don't know what that looks like, because it is to really root it out means getting down to such a fundamental level that I think most people haven't even considered what that means. I mean, we're not just tweaking a few things, you know, we're not just changing the tax code or retraining police. It's much, much more systemic and much more deeply rooted. So that is a really great question, and I wish I had more of an answer.
No, I think you answered it pretty much for me.
Together.
Is there anything else that you want to say in terms of, like, maybe getting your friends off of the fence, or talking about why the fight against white supremacy is incredibly important?
I think the work that you're doing to share, you know, to talk about what's happening here, I think people of faith need to start in their congregations and make it clear that this is work that we have to do. This is not sort of, I'd like to join a committee, I'm going to join my racial justice committee.
This
is work that we have to be aware of. We have to understand that we breathe it, and that we are called by just about every faith tradition, and people of conscience too. You know, it's got to be everyone, but we really have to start in our local groups and make it stick.
Yeah, and it looks like you're being called right now. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right, have a good day.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to tell you that.
Is the meeting over?
Yeah, Anne Marie and Joyce have started walking, following the clergy.
Okay.
I'm
cool.
Yeah. Elizabeth.
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's okay. You did great. Thank you. No. So, I mean, as you can hear, there's also coordination events going on in terms of, like, just people keeping with each other, people trying to stay safe, people checking in on each other. I had three separate people be like, "Yo, what group are you with today?" And I'm like, "I'm not with the group, but I appreciate your concern." Mm-hmm. People are really concerned about everybody out there, especially with the large police presence, especially people of color. Like, people are really, yep. Uh oh. Sounds like we have an encore.
Yeah.
I'm an A12 survivor.
Somebody else has jumped on the mic.
Oh, all right. Why don't you hold up the phone, because we can hear him.
And if you want to come and hold,
they're calling to hold space on 4th Street.
We can hear.
At the site in which Heather Heyer lost her life. So I think that would be an incredibly powerful show of solidarity and strength and remembrance to Heather, especially on the one-year anniversary of her death. I've already paid my respects. I urge others to do the same. In fact, I think I pay my respects every time I walk by that corner, because I have to do so often because it's my town, because it's the place that I live. And I can't just bypass streets. You have to face this trauma head on. So I urge people to, at some point this weekend, go to Fourth and Water, pay respects to Heather Heyer, remember her. Her last words were on social media, said, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. So I urge people to be outraged, especially today. We need to show people that these people's lives don't go in vain, and the threat is real against white supremacists. They will try by whatever means to take out as many activists, people of color, people who they don't feel deem the same rewards and entitlement as theirs. They will wipe them from the face of the earth. So do not be deceived. This is important. This is hard, grimy work that these people do, and they should be commended. They should be honored,
as you're walking away,
and shown that love. So
we're looking for a missing car key. Thank you.
They're also looking for a missing car key. So if you see a missing car key at Washington Square Park or Washington Square, I'm still stuck in New York. If you're still in Washington Park, yeah, it's important that you do your thing.
Excellent.
So it looks like everybody's walking off and towards the downtown area. I am doing the same, walking along.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
So this has been this is great. One of the things that I think is great about this is I think it's giving people who don't have access to activists, who don't go to rallies like this, a view into what these people are like. I know that there's a lot, just talking to people around town this weekend, there's a lot, I feel a misunderstanding and mischaracterization of that, because activists are bad-mouthed in the media, and there's a particular narrative that gets put out that they are volatile, that they are irrational, that they are nutso, crazy, insane, that they are troublemakers. And it's really, I think it's moving for at least I hope it's moving for people to see the activists as we see them, people of really, really grounded, people of conscience. Let's do another drop and see if you can find one more person to talk to specifically.
I think they're all rolling out, Doug. And you know, quite honestly, as many people want to talk to people, a lot of people don't want to talk to people. So
I got
cool.
that.
You know, well, we'll just keep it what it is. I'm going to keep walking to where other people are walking. So
all right.
It's cool. I mean, yeah. You said you're going to do a drop?
Yeah, let's do a drop. You want to do a drop?
All right, do a drop. And then, yeah.
And then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Do the drop right now. This
okay.
I'm going to drop.
Hey, Charlottesville. I'm Flora Lark.
And I'm Jonah Noel.
And we are the Fire Tigers.
This is Homegrown, your show about local art
on
94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Do you?
I was a little hesitant.
Yeah. So say it a few times.
Yeah.
94.7 WPVC.
Okay. WPVC. Mm-hmm. WPVC.
Okay. Third time's charm. We're ready. Hey, Charlottesville.
47 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Clinton. David's down there. Stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. He's going to ask locals about their memories from the Unite the Right rally last year and about their plans for today. That's what's happening. We're here with David still. David, you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Did you just walk past? What was that sound? Did you just walk past the helicopter or something?
Did I do what?
Did you just walk past the helicopter or something? There was a strange sound coming from there.
Yeah, it's been above our heads for the longest time. It seems like wherever activists are, that's where the chopper is, too. So, like, you say there's not a heavy police presence, but there's always a police presence that's always going to be watching us. So I'm not surprised. I'm not shocked. I'm not alarmed either. So it is what it is.
And obviously you're not deterred.
Exactly. And I think that's the tenor of the weekend. Vigilant, ready, however relieved, that nothing pops off. And that's another thing I want to get into about the characterization of activists and anti-fascists. Like, first of all, they characterize it by, giving it, ominous nicknames like Antifa or something like that. Yo, what's so horrible about being anti-fascist?
Right, yeah.
What's the danger in being deemed or being labeled as that? Would you rather be labeled pro-fascist?
Exactly.
Rather be labeled like pseudo-fascist? Like, what? I don't understand. Like, when did anti-fascist become a bad word?
Right. I thought that as Americans, as members, as patriotic members of a democratic republic, I thought that being against fascism came with the territory.
You would think. But no, you can just change it into a clever name and then nobody will have nothing to say. Like, it's really interesting.
And I think part of what goes on with the Antifa thing is that what they attach to it is that this is that somehow, again, it's this question of these false equivalencies. It's like, oh, here's this violent leftist force. that's
exactly.
just as bad
it's
as
like
as the
again.
Violent white supremacist, even though, you know, the United States has this a long, long, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of year long history of violent white supremacist forces. And
yeah.
and nothing like that from the left. What do you
mm-hmm. exactly? What, and, and that's another thing. Like this is about like Antifa aren't violent. If anything, this is about defense. Like you've heard of judo. Judo's not about imposing your will on an opponent. It's about defending yourself from the offensiveness of that opponent. So, of course. It's crazy how people will just like make it out to be something completely than what it is. But yeah, they're marching the streets right now.
Do you know the groups that are out there? There's the clergy, the congregate. There's the clergy group. Is Black Lives Matter in the house?
Clergy is out there. Members of BLM is out there. Every member of the coalition is out there. Doing their thing. So they're in the field. Some have already left and on the way because the crowd is a quarter the size of what it was.
Hey, for listeners who don't know, tell them what the coalition is.
Well, technically there's no like unified actual coalition, but
right.
there are a group of individuals. But the activists are, you know, are cognizant and communicative with each other. So in that case, that there is this this amorphous coalition that when there is, say, you know, over 1,000 white nationalists coming into your town, or say over 1,000 militarized police officers are coming into your town, then those groups of people talk amongst with each other, and they game plan and they figure out, okay, well, how do we defend ourselves against this ominous, violent threat that is more than likely coming to bust skulls? And they talk about it, and whether it be through text message, whether it be through meeting, there is an activist circle in Charlottesville that is strident about protecting the community members of Charlottesville. And I am blessed to live in a town that actually has some semblance of activist organization. Like, that's important, especially in this college town that thrives in, you know, again, pervasive white supremacy. So it's important that Charlottesville has that activist foundation to work against a lot of the policies that are coming out, like gentrification, like inaffordable housing, like disproportionality of stop and frisk. So all this is very important for Charlottesville to have in the fight against white supremacy.
Can you talk about the difficulty of defending yourself against a system that wants to criminalize your defense of yourself?
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is. The fear and the promise by
David. David, I think we lost David. Oh, there you are.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we lost you for a moment. Fear, you. We got to fear and promise by, and then you dropped out.
Oh, my bad.
Don't scare me like that, David.
Right now, and I'm going through certain spots that are probably not so great in terms of reception.
Right. So you're saying fear and promise by?
Yeah, I'm losing you too. Just cut me out and continue with the show.
All right, David. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Much love. We'll talk later.
All right. Okay. Well, it's 54 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. That was our man, David Von Strawn, down at Washington Park at the Heather Heyer Memorial. Got a chance to see what it's like from the activism side, talk to some activists out there. Want to thank everyone who took a moment to talk to us on the air. Stay tuned. Coming up next, it's the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. He's going to ask locals about their memories from the Unite the Right rally of last year and about their plans for today. Also want to mention that we've had a tune from Lauren Hoffman, Alethea Leventhal, and Shadow of the Moon. You can find that on Bandcamp. Please go there. Drop a dollar in Lauren's pocket for that wonderful song. And speaking of songs, we're going to chill out here with our man Keith Morris with his song Charlottesville by Name.
You can only justify your own life tearing someone else's down. You can't see it clear for what it is. You best turn yourself around, 'cause there's gonna come a time and place you're gonna have to stand and face shortcomings you tried to hide, that emptiness held inside. So long there's nothing now but hate led you here to meet this fate, led you here to wallow in your sorrow and your shame. In Charlottesville, they called you out by name. Yes, they did. Do you understand the evil you've come now to embrace? That crazy pounding in your heart, you finally got a taste of the power comes in numbers. Anonymous and free, the poverty, that passion, that blood has graced your lips, your eyes, your soul. And when the madness overcome, you took control. Were you really ever as you always lied and tried to claim the same? After Charlottesville, they called you out by name. Yes, they did. Was a man who worshipped himself. Easy lies slipped through his teeth. Stood for nothing but advantage. Nothing was beneath him. He was loud, was proud, but he fell down on his knees when the spirit stripped him naked and answered him in kind. Every wicked indiscretion in the dark hold of his mind, let God Almighty render unto him the truth what he became. On the bloody streets of Charlottesville, God called him out by name. And the past is what it was. It was a long time ago. Won't die. God ain't black and God ain't white. Looks like we could at least.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.